is upon us. It's time to dig in, to stand our ground, and watch for the next attack. You're in the Foxhole with Jason Barker.
Hey, hey, welcome back to the Foxhole. I'm your host, Jason Barker. As always, this is where we stand our ground and watch for the enemy's next move. And tonight, for the second time, I am joined by Serge the Purge, who is a guy out there doing on-the-ground reporting. He's basically looking at Middle America, I would call it, kind of like Middle Earth, where we all live. instead of just doing the 20-second Fox News clips or CNN news clips, he's out there talking to people. So, Serge, just in case they missed the first one, tell us about yourself, you know, where you come from and what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I come from the, previously the music industry. Now I tell everyone I'm semi-retired from that. for many reasons that we kind of talked about on the first podcast. But yeah, I used to live in Los Angeles. Then I lived in Nashville. I live in Arizona. That's where I'm originally from. Arizona, even though we have issues in the state, I think the people here are still relatively freedom lovers. Definitely a pro Second Amendment state, unlike California, our next door neighbor. And, that's pretty much what I do is I go on the ground, talk to people in small towns, big cities. And my goal eventually... my cat here. My goal.
Oh, we welcome furry critters on this show. We love furry critters.
Yeah, hopefully, her tail doesn't keep going in my camera. basically, what I do is I do on the ground reporting. I do kind of documentary style videos. So usually, my goal is to try to get in touch with somebody local to the city or town that I'm in. To discuss the town, because obviously they're going to be way more of an expert than I am, right. Just going to a place and saying, hey, what's up? I've never been here before. And then getting some interviews, I feel like that can always go different angles. Of course, I do that kind of stuff too, but it's definitely easier to always get someone from the area, in touch before you get there, kind of thing. To kind of take you around town per se, rather than just going in blind. But sometimes I go in blind too.
that's kind of interesting that you do that, because if you look at, like I said, the mainstream news, whether it's Fox or CNN or MSNBC or whoever it is, they'll put it from a federal perspective, especially when it comes to this immigration stuff. That's what I'm going to talk about for a second, immigration. They look at it from their perspective and tax dollars and this and that and the other. And I know that Texas is doing its thing to curb that, to try to make people come across legally. They have their own struggles, and the federal government don't care because they're not on the ground talking about it. And I'm not going to go into whether it's good or bad. I'm just saying that from a perspective of how do you deal with a situation, any situation, whether it's homelessness or immigration or whatever, you really got to talk to the locals. That's really how you're going to get to the solution, I think.
Yeah. Well, one thing I just want to say about the homeless thing, almost, I want to say 90% of homeless people that I've talked to, usually it is a choice. Probably 90% of the time, they do not want to be in society any longer. I definitely need to put more video of that on the channel, but just in my personal life, especially from like living in LA and stuff, when I used to talk to a lot more homeless people, they were, kind of a casual occurrence. a lot of them were like, I hate society. I'm a victim of society. We started this commune. Usually, like we see the tent cities, it's usually a group of people doing that. It's not so much of like, oh, they ran out of space. It's usually, oh, we just started doing this because, and then a lot of the time they don't want to go back into society. And you find a lot more people, I think, closer to my age in their 20s, more than not, doing that. It's usually the elderly that are actual victims of their situation, because they're surrounded by a lot of violence. Because, like I said, usually the young and able people that are homeless, 90% of the time, in my personal experience that I've encountered, it's a choice. They don't like people, is what it comes down to.
You know, that's really interesting, because my time in L.A., which was the early to mid-90s before I went to, sorry, my time in Vegas, L.A., I didn't really know so many people there that were homeless. But in Vegas, I did, because I would go sit at the bus stop waiting to go from my job to my home, or, you know, travel around the strip or whatever. And there's always guys out there with the signs, you know, and this old guy named Pops, he used to buy me a beer. The guy had money. He had more money than I had.
I believe it.
Yeah. I asked him one day, well, why are you homeless? He's like, I don't want to play by the rules. So I definitely see that. I just didn't know it was to that extent that people actually choose to do that.
Well, and I think it's more so on the West Coast too. And a lot of it is because of the weather. I actually think primarily it is because of the weather, because it's easy to be homeless when it doesn't, you know, have elements you have to deal with. Because I remember going to a comedy club in West Hollywood one time, and this dude, I guess, had just moved from New York City to L.A. or whatever. And, you know, he's like poking around at the jokes, the L.A. jokes versus New York thing. And then he finally got around to the homeless thing, and he's just straight up was, you know, he said, you know, you guys as homeless people are weird. He's like, in New York City, you know, usually, you know, you talk to someone, they got a story, you know, you almost might feel bad for them sometimes, you know, you want to help them out. And here you guys, everyone's just smoking crack. And I mean, there's a lot of truth to that. I don't know how New York is now. I'm sure it's a little, you know, more accentuated than that. But yeah, LA, I think everybody always had that culture shock of going there. And it's just like, whoa, these guys, everyone wants to be here on the street because it's lawless, you know?
Wow. That's interesting. And I think you're right about the weather. That's one thing I did notice is before I went out there, I never seen homeless people like where it's like cold and rain, you know, dreary, freezing rain and snow and stuff. But we see that now, though. So I think that may have shifted, at least in the Midwest area.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of it's, you know, I think every city's suffering. But I did read recently that the top five worst cities for homeless right now are all on the West Coast.
Yeah, well, I guess that brings us to the topic of the night. So you recently did a project, and I found it interesting. I actually watched the videos and stuff. So tell us about what you just did recently, which you've thrown up on YouTube, and we'll get to that where they can find it and see that. But
yeah, so ironically enough, I actually did this video with my dad, who's a retired law enforcement. And part of the reason, I just want to preface, because some people were like thinking, why'd you just like randomly take your dad? Well, part of the reason, frankly, is actually because he has reciprocity in all 50 states as for Second Amendment. You know, he can conceal carry in all 50 states no matter what. He doesn't need a permit because he's retired law enforcement. So L.A. is one of those cities, you know, I really prefer to not go there without a firearm, frankly. It just is what it is. I mean, it's a dangerous place. And coincidentally enough, there are plenty of other dangerous cities in America that you still can actually. St. Louis, ironically, is one of the cities I can actually still carry a firearm. I have a permit and I can do it in that state of Missouri without.
It's actually they switched over to the constitutional carry now.
Oh, so, there you go. So, yeah, there's still dangerous cities that it doesn't matter. But L.A., unfortunately, well, California, you know, is not a friendly state for that. So that was part of the reason. And then me and my dad personally have some history there. He's also worked a number of cases in Los Angeles when he was a police officer doing homicide cases and stuff. So both of us are very like me and my dad both are actually so familiar with L.A. We don't even need a map to get there. And can navigate the city, you know. So that was part of the reason. I just want to preface that. But yeah, basically we went and I went into my old neighborhood where I used to live, which was in Hollywood when I was, you know, still in the music industry heavily. And the neighborhood, you know, basically the whole idea was just to see, has the neighborhood gotten worse? Has it gotten better? Has it stayed the same? Now, I know from my dad's personal opinion, and I think this is because he didn't live in that neighborhood obviously with me, was that, oh, it doesn't look any different, right, than it did 5 years ago. But to me personally, having, you know, lived in that neighborhood and walked those streets every day, a lot had actually changed. Now, the homeless problem, like we were just touching on, has gotten worse, in my opinion. And the reason for that is because it used to be, and I think I might have talked to you about this a little bit the first time we did the podcast, but Hollywood Boulevard itself, like the actual street with the sign that says that on there, was
the stars, the Walk of Fame.
The Walk of Fame, That was considered to be basically sacred ground. So you could not have homeless people. The cops would actually go and just even take them down to the next street.
It was behind the alleyways on left or right.
Usually be going south. So like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain if you don't know the city, right? But like, if you're on Hollywood, basically goes in a big, it's on a big mountain. It goes in a big slope, you know, that at the foothills. So Hollywood Boulevard is kind of the dividing point between really nice part of LA.
The hills.
Go up the mountain. Yep, exactly. And then when you go south, not as nice. So they used to just take the homeless people down to like Sunset or Santa Monica Boulevard, you know, way far south to where it gets seedy. And that's, you know, where the tents would all be. And then this time going back, I saw a ton of tents on the Walk of Fame. I mean, I couldn't even believe it, frankly.
And that's amazing to me, because that was like their bread and butter in that area for tourism. You had Man's Chinese Theater. You had, what was it, Roosevelt Hotel or whatever.
Yeah. The Chinese Theater especially. Yeah. The huge tourist attraction.
Is that still there, by the way? I mean.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. At least from what I'm aware.
For people that don't know, that's where the famous people put their hands and their feet in the concrete and they sign it. And, you know, you go, there's a big foyer area before you go into this old theater. And they do a lot of premieres there with the red carpet rollout. And they'll actually block the streets off and put bleachers up and stuff.
Yeah, the Oscars are on that Hollywood and Highland area in La Brea. Yeah, that's all still there from
La Brea.
Yeah.
Hollywood and La Brea. I lived in a dive motel there for about 2 months.
Yeah. No way. Are you serious?
I'm serious. And it was not someplace you wanted to be at night.
No, I was going to say,
daytime's okay. Yeah.
I know that motel. Yeah. That's bad. Yeah. See, I think, and that's also the preconception, right? Like, people think like, oh, it's Hollywood. It's going to be nice. Definitely has hit the decline very hard. It is not nice. I would not bring your family there by any means, not even for a vacation, not even for one day, not even during the daytime. I wouldn't do it. And so some of the stuff I've, you know, experienced when I lived there, like example, me and my buddy were leaving a recording studio and like near Hollywood and Highland, actually. It was pretty close by. And we walked out. It was getting evening. It wasn't quite dark yet, but the sun was going down and there was a ton of tweakers out. It gets pretty shady pretty quick. And there was a family walking with their kid, and there was just so happened to be some lady on the street, literally smoking like crack or meth or something, just straight up in public. Didn't matter. And then there was another, you know, dude probably tripping out on like PCP, just going nuts. And, you know, you see the family in front of us walking, like start gripping their kid's hand, you know, trying to basically steer them out of this direction. And my buddy, being super cynical, just chimed over to the family like, welcome to LA. you know
real quick, I just want to go back to what you had said earlier, that back in the day, at least, a lot of the homeless people were homeless by choice, because that was kind of the lifestyle, kind of like king of the road, kind of hobo, I want to ride the train. And I'm telling you, that's kind of attractive to me when you're out of the system and kind of chilling.
I find attraction to it as well. Yeah. But obviously, like, you know, they get welfare. That's the difference, I think.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even need that. But, you know, I have family and stuff, so I can't do that. If I was single, I'd probably have that little stick with the red scarf on the back, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hopping on trains. I think that would be an adventurous life. And the people that I knew in Vegas that were homeless by choice actually liked that kind of lifestyle because they were free. They were free of everything. But with that being said, when I lived in LA, that was kind of the homeless population there was like that. They were kind of just wanted to be homeless, if they even were homeless. A lot of people pretended to be, but they actually had really nice houses, nice cars. It was just how they earned their money. But it was relatively safe to walk around. Maybe not at night, but during the day you were good. It was all tourists and stuff, and it was all pretty. It was all dressed up.
Yeah.
But nighttime, you know, as long as you kind of like looked ahead and said, oh, there might be a problem up there, I might go around the block, that was okay. But you're saying it's a lot worse now, even during the day?
Yeah. Well, and it was getting like that even when I lived there. It was kind of like, you might not want to. If I was a female, I definitely would recommend, you know, not walking alone during even the daytime. But yeah, like if you see on, well, ironically, you see on the video, like at the end, me and my dad are walking down, I think it was like Cahuenga or something. Yeah, I think we're walking towards Sunset Boulevard. And my dad's like, well, you know, it doesn't smell like piss like it used to. And then we walk, you know, right by a homeless guy sleeping. And it's like, oh, never mind. You know, certain spots still smell like pee. But yeah, I mean, it's a couple things. It's dangerous for a multitude of reasons. Just as a pedestrian walking, you could get shanked by a homeless guy who doesn't want you walking in their space. That's how they see it. They see it as their space. You know, they're entitled to it a lot of the time.
Fair enough. Yeah.
You know, some of them are not that way. There's plenty of, you know, like I said, homeless people I've met that are just down on their luck. But I ran into a lot of people where they, you know, would lay a spot right on the sidewalk and, you know, that's their spot. And you'd be lucky that they're not going to shank you for walking by their spot in their space. You know,
it's almost like prison rules, you know, like
it is. It is like that. Yeah. What I was going to say, it's also very unsanitary. The whole city. I don't know how many people know this because I've told a couple people to this and they're like always surprised. But you probably know this, that California, like while I still live there, I want to say, yeah, now like 5 years ago, passed a law that made it legal to not tell anyone if you have HIV and you give it to them.
Yep,
yeah. So, you know, you could step on a needle and get HIV if it, you know, goes and penetrates your skin somehow. Nothing's going to happen, you know. Just is what it is, you know. And yeah, it does smell like urine everywhere you go. There's feces a lot of the time. It's human feces.
Well, California, especially LA, is one of those places, and I was actually first place in my life I went to that you couldn't just walk in and use a restroom, say, hey, I need to use the bathroom. You had to be a paying customer. And
I did notice that a lot of people didn't know that. I think that's more so on the West Coast in general. Like Arizona has stuff like that too. But yeah, LA also, I think, probably was one of the first cities I've been to where you couldn't just use the bathroom. It was like, because the people just think you're going to smoke crack in their bathroom or whatever.
Or you know? Sleep there or make a house out of it. I remember I was like, I went to a gas station once. And I'm like, hey, can I use the bathroom? And this is the first time I found out that they didn't have where you could just use a restroom. And the dude's like, yeah, it's out back. And I go out back and it was, you had to put a quarter in the freaking thing and to turn the handle to open the door. And the door was so spring held shut that it slammed on me. I lost my quarter.
Oh yeah. Like, I believe it,
man. I can't even use the bathroom. I got to pay money to use the bathroom. And I think that, I mean, what you were saying is a lot of people are now homeless, not by happenstance or whatever, but by choice because they went out of the system, which is understandable. I don't know if that's the case across the US, but you know, in the better areas, but
well, I'm sorry, go ahead. Finish what
I was going to say, it inherently brings problems, sanitary problems you mentioned. So could we fix this by providing public restrooms? You know,
it's a give or take because like Santa Monica example or Venice Beach even, which is a lot worse, has plenty of public restrooms that you wouldn't even want to go in now because people literally just take a dump. Not like somehow they didn't make it to the toilet or I don't know what they're doing. Okay. Like I've walked into some restrooms and it's just like, how did this happen? You know, there's like crap on the floor. There's crap on a wall or something. And it's just like, what? You know, there's kids that are tourists, you know, going to use that. I mean, it is a health hazard. It is definitely a crisis just on a health. If we're going to take away the homeless factor of it, it's a health problem by itself alone without the homeless people. Like you need to clean up the city. And then deal with one or the other. You know what I'm gonna. You know what I mean. Because the housing thing is not a solution.
Who's gonna pay for it? And that's another thing is we could talk about, okay, if they want to be homeless, they can be homeless. You know, if it's not by their choice, it's not by their choice, whatever. We have this health problem to deal with. And, you know, I brought up, let's do public restrooms. Well, who pays for that? Should it be on the taxpayer to pay for it? Because ultimately, when you get into conditions like this, like San Francisco and LA, that brings down the tourism, which brings down the revenue coming into the city. So the city can't pay for it on its own. It has to tax the person to pay for it, who's actually paying a mortgage, a ridiculous mortgage, by the way, in LA. Then they get taxed further to clean up a problem that they didn't create.
Well, and I want to touch on that for a second, because I was going to mention that there is an incredibly insane economic divide, unlike any other city. And California in general has this problem, but LA and San Francisco are the two main. And I actually want to say LA is probably worse with the economic divide.
Really?
I know San Francisco is on paper more expensive, but you have to think about there's Beverly Hills, Pacific Palisades, which most people don't even know what that is unless you live there, which is like even nicer than Beverly Hills. Yeah, you know, Malibu, right? And then you have Skid Row, the entire downtown fashion district, Hollywood. Most of East Hollywood is a dump. When you start getting to the tourist area, people say that it's nicer. My personal opinion is it is not. But you have this economic divide. Now, this is something that I don't even know if I should say this, but I'm going to say it anyways because it needs to be mentioned. And this is just a personal thing that I know of. So like in the video, I go to the first place I ever worked at in LA was that record store. That was before I had my foot in the door in the music industry. That was kind of, I was literally 18 years old and got a job there. And the guy didn't even want to hire me because initially he's like, dude, you don't even know all this old music. But I did, obviously, because
Real quick, go watch the video because that was amazing. You went back there with your dad. And the dude that worked there was the same dude you worked with. And he was like, so ecstatic to see you.
That was crazy. Yeah. I haven't talked to that guy. Yeah. In like 7 years. Yeah. Brad. Yeah. Real nice guy. And yeah, he doesn't own it or anything. He was just an employee there. Super cool. But yeah, that's how I got the job, right? It's just my knowledge of music. My dad raised me on his record collection and I was very familiar with like rare album covers, you know, how all that kind of stuff worked. That's how I got the job as an 18-year-old. Otherwise, probably, you know, the guy wouldn't have hired an 18-year-old.
You should have been like into Nirvana and, you know.
I was into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. Well, like I knew all the old punk records, you know, that whole kind of thing, right? And I could always tell him, like, if a cover got banned when it came out, and he's like, how do you even know that? I'm like, well, my dad has the album, you know? So anyways, with the economic divide, though, I want to touch on this because, you know, right outside of that record store is the Dream Hotel. Now, that's a hotel chain. I don't know what the first one actually was. It might have been in like Miami or something. But that hotel has just got like degeneracy, you know, happening all the time. I mean, that literally was like watching television working at that store. We'd be, you know, filing records and they're seeing like all of these, you know, frankly, smoking girls walking out of here into like rental Lamborghinis just to have a night out on the town. Now, what's a block down from that hotel is Tent City. When there's not a business like that in front of the street, Tent City for miles until you hit another kind of popping area where there's just too many people walking around for you to be homeless. That it just becomes an inconvenience for them. So it's like, okay, you can't be homeless here because you're going to get stepped on by a girl's high heels, essentially. And I want to, you know, touch on too the fact that inside of the record store itself, okay, this is kind of I'm just going to say it. I'm not even going to preface it anymore. The owner of the record store, okay, they had a... Well, let me say this first. The club that's talked about in the video called Daddy's Diamonds, okay, that was not there when I worked there. Now, we did use that back room for a multitude of private events. Some famous bands came through while I worked there, played back there, had radio interviews back there. That room was kind of used as a private event space. And frankly, there was you know, illegal activities that happened in that back room. What choice did I have? I got paid like $10 an hour. So the owner of the club named that room after himself. Okay. Daddy's Diamonds. He used to call himself Big Daddy Diamond. Okay. And this guy, I literally am not making this up. Okay. This is not an exaggeration. Every single night of the week, every single night, except for maybe one or two, this guy would be bringing prostitutes to the record store to do whatever, you know, he was going to do after we all left that night. But in the midst of all that, we'd be basically, you know, peasant class going and serving up drinks for, you know, his people that were, it was different every night too. Not, I rarely saw the same girl come through twice within a month, but they would, you know, there was regulars. And, you know, you start wondering, right? Like, I'm 18 and I haven't caught on to this yet. And I'm like, you know, this guy is not he's not a baller. He's not a good looking guy. So me and this guy, Brad, it's, you know, so I ask him one night, I'm like, hey, you know, what's the deal, man? You know, this dude's like in his 50s. He's got these girls my age coming every night. This is not authentic. Right. And he's like, oh, and I remember this conversation. He's like, oh, you caught on to that. And I'm like, how could you not? Like, the guy comes in on business hours, brings these, you know, escorts in or whatever. And yeah, so, and this guy had money. And right outside of that, you know, you have this elitism mentality of like a guy like this. He's a cool guy. He lives in Hollywood. He's got these employees that work for him that make nothing. He makes all the money. He's Mr. Hollywood. He's got his escorts and he's, you know, he's Big Daddy Diamond. And right outside of that, on the streets, you got people literally smoking crack and shooting up heroin. And this was actually kind of before fentanyl was a big deal when I lived there, but probably a bit of that too. And you have literally anarchy on the street right outside of you. And there's this economic divide, but also a cultural divide of there's all these people are in denial about everything happening around them in California. It is the California mentality. And I have to be honest, going back there, it was so weird because you get away from it for a while. And then you're like, was it really as bad as I thought it was? Then you go back for one day. And I went back for this was only one day. And you could feel the vibe as soon as you got into LA. You could feel the pretentiousness of most of the people. And I'm not saying all the people, but, you know, the way they talk, the way they dress, depending on what area you're in. Like, you go to Pasadena. It's that we always called that the Beverly Hills of the East. You know, you go there, you listen to these people's conversations about nothing. They really think they're the shit and they think the whole world revolves around them. And they don't care. All they care about is status, you know, like just like this guy at the record store, all he cares about is his status. But literally right outside on the street are people shooting up heroin. I mean, where are you going to see that anywhere else in America? Seriously.
I don't know. I'd like to talk to Billy Ray and see if that's what's going on in New York right now.
Yeah, maybe New York you'll see that.
Yeah, that's, I know when I was there in LA, it was, you know, there was homeless people, there was drugs being used, and there was people that, you know, oh, I'm working at Denny's, but I'm actually an actor, you know, kind of thing. They were looking for their status, but nobody really cared. It was all just kind of a chill, laid back, you do what you want to do. But nobody's lifestyle affected anybody else's lifestyle. I guess that's where it was cool back then. But now you're talking about these tent cities and stuff where, and now it's starting to pull on the, government funds to pay for cleanup and things like that. And so, you know, now my laid back chilled attitude is actually costing other people money and it's already expensive enough. I mean, what's a one bedroom freaking loft apartment cost in LA, what, almost $2,000 a month or something now, you know?
Oh, you're no, lucky it's going to be like three. It's going to be like three. Yeah.
And it's because of the economic depression, because it costs so much to like house this kind of stuff. And I don't want to come down on homeless people, but what do you do? I guess that's the point of this is like, what do we do about it? You know, do we
give them? And I will say water? Well, my old apartment, you know, you see in that video too, like my old apartment that I lived in, got, it actually used to be like a mail boarding house before they converted it, bought it out. And then now it's gone. Now it's actually that again, essentially. And I couldn't really get a straight answer out of the, you know, security that was at the building. The doors were locked. And she comes out and I'm like, hey, what is this place now? Because it doesn't look like an apartment anymore. I was seeing, you know, definitely some interesting characters walk out of the building before I approached. And she's like, oh, it's a homeless place.
Like, and that's what killed
me. What does that mean?
That's what killed me about it. It's a homeless shelter, but they have to have security.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not really sure what the scoop is on that, you know. But that's, you know, the neighborhood itself, you could really, you know, you can only explain it if you're there in a way, like you really could feel the vibe, especially we went in at night, you know, totally. That's just a different scene when you do that. It just feels evil, man. Like, I don't even know what other way to put that city in itself. I think out of all the cities I've been to in America, Los Angeles is America's ugliest face. Now, maybe I'm biased because I live there, but also going back there after not being there for 5 years, it's just an ugly place, and you feel it when you're there, you know?
Well, L.A. has a special place in my heart because I hate cities. I absolutely hate cities, but I enjoyed Los Angeles.
Really?
The good, the bad, and the ugly of it. It was just a super laid back and it was different back then. This is back in the early to mid 90s. And,
oh yeah,
you know, you didn't have to be part of the ugliness. You could see it right in front of you, but you could walk past it and nobody messed with you, you know?
Sure.
I think that's changed though. I think, and I think maybe that's why all the people are getting out of those cities and moving to places like Texas. Cause they've destroyed it.
Well, yeah, and the one thing I noticed too, like, and again, this is the difference I've noticed between LA and other major cities, even East Coast cities. LA is sketchy everywhere. You don't have to be in a bad neighborhood for it to be sketchy. I'm serious because
I know.
Yeah, like you go into, I mean, even St. Louis example, that's pretty bad, you know, on paper, right? Statistically, St. Louis, I think, still has like the highest murder rate per capita or whatever. Maybe it's New Orleans now. But there's still good areas of those cities. Like the suburbs are good, a lot of them still, as long as you just don't go into like East St. Louis, essentially. And
that's Illinois, technically. So
I'm just saying. Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but I grew up in my teen years in St. Louis. So I know St. Louis very, very well.
Would you agree with my statement then, or do you feel like I'm off?
Yeah, I mean, there's good neighborhoods. You can go from good neighborhood to good neighborhood and travel through a bad neighborhood. And in fact, this medic, she was a medic I worked with here, actually where I live now, I worked with here at Fort Leonard Wood. She was from one kind of sub city. Cause you know, these big cities are actually made of sub cities, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We went to the same high school and we have very different memories of how good it was. I thought it was a crap hole and she thought it was amazing because she came home every day to her nice neighborhood. And I came home to, you know, I wouldn't say I lived in the ghetto or nothing. I didn't live in the ghetto. It was a decent suburb, but we still had our problems. And very different memories on, you know, how it was back then based off of, you know, we went to school is a controlled environment, and then you go back home to your thing. So I was telling her, yeah, I went to Rittner High School, and I'll say it's Rittner High School. It's on St. Charles Rock Road. And
sure,
I can't remember what city, if it's considered Overland or what, but anyway, I thought it was a crap hole. She thought it was the greatest high school ever.
It is interesting, the perspective, because I had a lot of conversations with people in Los Angeles like that when I lived there. I was like, man, this is like sketch. And they'd like live in that neighborhood, you know? And they're like, yeah. I don't know, man. Your definition is different than mine. And I'm like, okay, have you lived in California your whole life? Usually the answer is like yes, or I came from Europe, you know? I came from England, you know? And it's like, I think you need to see the rest of the country, because to me, a normal person, this is sketchy, regardless if it's on paper a decent area to live, you know.
Yeah, and I think you're getting down to the heart of the topic here, which is I call it frogs slowly boiling, what we consider to be normal. And you know, and if you take someone out of like say LA or New York or, and Little John, our friend Little John that frequents the chat, he went from New York where he loved it in New York. He talks fondly about it, but he loves where he lives now in the country.
Yeah.
I think that when you're exposed to stuff and things become normal, like feces on the street and dirty needles and, you know, having to watch yourself at night, go out with a friend, you know, scared to get into a cab because you don't know if it's a real cab or not. You know, it could be some a fake cab. Those things become normal to us over time. And I don't know what we do about that, but it's almost like society as a whole is a boiling frog that's learned to accept these things as the norm.
Well, this is an interesting thought too. I was having this conversation with someone yesterday, actually, matter of fact. And I want to say too, real quick, that LA specifically has a lot of tension there in that city. Lots of tension every race, a lot of racial tension. More than any
and then
other
the
place.
The police as well. The police versus the public is another tension point.
So one thing I'll say about the police too, and obviously my whole family, as I just mentioned, is law enforcement. But I will say LAPD, is a very corrupt police department. We used to literally just see people's rights getting violated like every night, multiple times. Like in Hollywood, the cops would just pull you over and make everyone step out of the car, handcuff you, put you on the sidewalk, search your vehicle, and then let you go. Nothing happens.
And you weren't arrested. You were detained for your safety and ours as well. That's arrest. If you're arresting my movement, you're slowing my movement. You are arresting me, and there's no right thread. There's no. It's happened to me. It's happened to me more.
Oh, has it? Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah, and that was
The wrong looking car at the wrong age. You know, I got a nice. Let's just say I'm driving a nice Corvette or something and I'm 18 years old. They assume you're a drug dealer.
Oh, yeah.
They yank you out. They cuff you. They go through your shit. They leave it on the street, by the way. You got to pick it up and put it back in. Doesn't matter if it's been raining. And I got this happened to me in St. Louis. I got pulled over while moving and I had a hatchback vehicle full of clothes that were just laid there. They weren't in baskets or boxes or nothing. And they ripped my clothes out and threw them in the wet gutter. I'm cuffed on the curb, and then they didn't find anything, so they said you're free to go. So I pick up my wet clothes, throw them back in a pile. I go around the corner, get pulled over again. That was in Pagedale, by the way. Stay out of Pagedale, St. Louis.
I'll stay out of there.
it was because I had a nice car. You know, I had a nice job, so I had a nice car. I just happened to be moving, and I was doing it in the middle of the night.
In terms of the tension, right, the racial tension and the hostility. I mean, this is more of like a historical note, but I know now more so than ever, the country has a ton of, you know, racial diversity. If that's a good thing or a bad thing is definitely up for debate. But one thing that I do know, and I think it was Thomas Jefferson or around that time period that was talking about how the actual goal of the melting pot effect was not to just, hey, let's get every single country to come into our country and become citizens. In fact, they really only wanted you coming here if you were primarily a Protestant with your religion and, you know, usually a Caucasian, because that usually went hand in hand with your religious views, hence your values. So you wouldn't end up, you know, clashing with the culture in America, right? Now what you see is, and this, again, no fault to any other culture, but if you come here, right, and America is supposed to be founded on certain values, like, you know, we don't shit on sidewalks, frankly, in this country. That's not a normal thing. But, you know, and I'm not even saying that's an immigration thing, but I'm just saying in terms of everyone's values and stuff, you get enough cultures together from other countries that they don't share the same values. That's when you do start getting the tension primarily in big coastal cities, because that's, you know, people immigrate here. That's the first stop. That's usually where they stay. New York City, LA, Seattle, Portland, Maryland, you know, Baltimore, all those kinds of places is usually where immigrants will end up staying. That's, you know, where they, you know, that's the first stop, you know?
And you know what? I think the whole melting pot idea, you know, I've kind of rethought this over the years. And I always thought, well, why does and look at New York as an example? You know, they got their Italian town, they got their Irish town, German town, they got their Chinatown, and they were all kind of separate. And mm-hmm. I always thought that was a bad thing. But I think now I think it's actually a good thing going back, because you can come here and be familiar and still be American. And then yeah. people can shop around for their experience. If you want to, you know, eat Chinese food, you want authentic Chinese food, go to Chinatown, where maybe not yeah. everyone speaks English. So I don't know. It's something I've rethought over the years. I thought initially when I was young, oh, you come here, you got to speak English and you got to be American and you got to believe our beliefs and stuff. I think as a whole, we need to go back to the fundamental, you know, how America started, which is freedom. Freedom of yeah. religion, freedom of speech, freedom of everything. So if that means I want to have my little community over here that is primarily Korean, let's say they're Korean, that's okay. That's okay for them to do that. And
well, they have that in LA, as you know, Korea.
Yeah, LA does too. Yeah, LA does too. LA is a little more intermingled, I think. Like they're very intermingled.
And I actually will say, you know, and I hate that I even have to preface this, but it's not racist to say this. I mean, usually the Asian culture in America in general is actually more American than a lot of Americans that I've run into.
I would agree. Many Chinese
people, many Korean people wearing like literally pro Second Amendment apparel. People, they get offended if I do it as a white guy. It's like, no, you know, you come from an oppressed country like China. Of course you're going to love that here, you know?
Well, I mean, all you got to do is look at the, college, how they lean things against certain, you know, people in college, you know, college applications and acceptance. And the Asians have been highly discriminated against because they came here and their culture is still, they still have a family unit. And they really stress that kids need to know their stuff and they need to study. And then they do all, you know, good marks. Then they get their applications for college and they're like, well, you know, we have too many Asians in here. So you're not making it. So we're going to let this other demographic in, and that's not fair because that was American. That was American that you work hard and you should get what you deserve based off of your merit. And that's kind of like been stacked against the Asian people as far as, I hate to say, but math and science, but they're just good at it. Let's just face it.
No, I mean, it's the way they're raised. I think a lot of it. And there is a lot of actually black on Asian crime in Los Angeles specifically. Yeah. In Koreatown, ironically, did not get completely trampled on during the LA riots because Koreans like the Second Amendment. and literally at that time, they all just went and sat on the roof of their businesses with rifles pointed at the, you know, the rioters. And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't go in there either, you know? Yeah.
You know, going back to what you were talking about, though, this everything we've talked about, you were talking about how there's like the elite class that can exist right next door to the useless plebs that live on the street. When we get pushed against each other, like, you know, like you're talking about the riots and stuff like that, aren't we kind of like reinforcing that where they kind of step back from it and they watch this stuff happen? And it seems to be escalating across the country now where we're all kind of being pushed against each other. And whatever you want to, you talk about political, you talk about racial, sex, whatever you want to mention, they push us against each other. Meanwhile, they step back and they're making their money. People like Soros, well, Soros is he even American? I don't think he's even American.
No, he's from Hungary.
Yeah, but you got Zuckerberg, you got Gates, you got all these people.
Well, he lives in America, though, just to... Clear. George Soros does live in America, but he is not from America originally.
Wow.
But I think he's a U.S. citizen. Quick question. You're gonna edit this, right?
Maybe not. This is.
Are you able to cut in a break right now? Because I have to like literally.
You know what? I want to talk about. you talked about music, right?
Yeah.
You know who Audi is? Modern Retro Radio.
Yeah.
I'm gonna play his commercial, and we will be right back.
New music, classic artists. That's how we do it here at Modern Retro Radio.
Lenny Kravitz has just released his 11th studio album.
Here is the ever-enduring pop genius, Beck.
Giving you the latest from Sheryl Crow.
Lindsey Buckingham.
Marilyn Manson. This is Garbage, a song called Blood for Poppies.
Robert Cray's channeling Al Green.
Better known as Chaka Khan.
Brand new music from Parliament Funkadelic.
Back in the 1980s and 1990s, we knew him as Terrence Trent D'Arby.
This is Taylor Dane.
You know that group, Foo Fighters?
I'm vaguely familiar with them, yeah.
The new album from Slash, Phil Collins, covers the Four Tops.
Metallica's 2016 double album, Hardwired to Self-Destruct.
Here we got Aerosmith with Beyond Beautiful.
And we're back from the break. What you saw was Modern Retro Radio. That is new music by artists that you love and know from the past. It's really good stuff. So go check it out, Modern Retro Radio. And here we go. I'm back with Serge. How you doing, Serge?
I'm good. How are you?
All right. So on the note of Audi's, Audi's a good friend of the show, and he guest hosts a couple times for me and stuff, and he's been on the show. You have a musical background as well. I kind of wanted to talk about that before we get out of here. So tell us, what's your music? You said you know old stuff, right? Let's talk about that.
I pretty much like all music. I'm a little conflicted nowadays about rap music, but I did love a lot of it, you know, growing up. And I can still have a conversation with anybody, you know, about most of that. Actually, I think I have had conversations on Twitter with Billy Ray about that a little bit too. I like all music. I kind of can play most music, except for, you know, some specialized stuff.
You play guitar?
Yeah, I play guitar and I play piano primarily.
Nice.
Yeah, that's actually my current day job. I still teach.
You know, Audi, our friend Audi that runs Modern Retro Radio, he does interviews. Would you consider going on with him and just talking about music and stuff?
Absolutely.
All right. I'll link you guys up, man. That'll be a great conversation to have.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I still love having those conversations, you know. In fact, the other night I was like doing some, you know, top five for everything with a bunch of people that I was out with, you know, just top five albums, top five artists or whatever, you know. I like that kind of stuff.
Who's your top? Like top. Audi would say it's either Clapton. I think it's Clapton, but Elvis is his big one. Who's your big one?
Oh, like of all time?
Of all time, any genre, any time.
If I had to pick like a single person, I would say Eddie Van Halen.
There you go. I can't disagree with that.
Because he's influenced everybody. I mean, my generation still innovated guitar unlike any other, you know, pretty much made modern guitar what it is. I mean, no one else has really hit it since that, I don't think, you know. So in terms of the musical stuff, yeah, probably him.
Well, there was a lot of copycats, you know, and I think 80s, 90s, 90s kind of broke the mold with the grunge movement. They kind of broke that. But all throughout the 80s, it seemed like everybody was copycatting that, you know, guitar riff, the solo, you know.
Yeah, you always hear like the dives, like.
Yeah, and the bending of the strings. Yeah, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to not, you know, want to do that, I guess, after I teach kids how to do it all the time.
You need to come teach me because I'm self-taught. One of my deployments, I said, you know what, I'm going to finally learn guitar and I can strum some chords. That's about
it. Oh, really? Yeah. I have some students who I'll like pull up old Dimebag, because Dimebag, you know, he did going up, you know, with the whammy bar. And I'll show some like little kids that, and they're like, what? I want to do that, you know.
Whammy bar is cheating, man. That's cheating.
Everyone, you know what? Whammy bars are just made for fun. That's the only reason. There's no musical application, really. I mean, there kind of is, but it's really just
you can make a guitar talk with a whammy bar if you're good enough with it.
Yeah. I mean, you make alien sounds, you know, there's all, I've had my day, you know?
Anyway, let's get back to it. I know we took a side journey there on the musical stuff. Cause, Audi is our friend and we ran his commercial, but anyway, back to, what you're doing. I want to share the screen here real quick. Let's see. There it is. Let me get us on there so we can see it together. There we go. So you got a couple YouTube channels, and back to what your purpose is. And I love what you're doing, because you're out there, and we talked about some stuff that people may not agree with, about why you want to be homeless or don't want to be homeless, and
guaranteed, yeah.
But you're out there actually getting the man on the street kind of interview stuff. So tell us about your channels and what you do.
Yeah. So like I was saying in the beginning, when I do like bigger documentary, like you could see my longer videos. Yeah. Like those ones are actually kind of short. Like if I do like a 20, like look at that one over there, the town that shouldn't exist, Jerome. That one wasn't even like that. I don't know if it was political per se, but it was more of a, you know, just looking at this weird mining town that actually has had a revival. And I actually felt like that was a quite positive video. You know, I try to do, I don't even try to do anything really. It just turns out to be what it is. But then I have some more spontaneous stuff. Like I think my most popular long format video right now is the, you know, Black Woman Speaks on White Privilege. And to be honest with you, I pretty much knew that was going to be a hit. I think I even told her that when we did the video. And the reason that video occurred, so there's a store up over here, maybe an hour and a half away from where I live. And it was a totally spontaneous thing. I saw it driving to do another video, believe it or not, in the opposing town there in Tombstone. And it was called the Trump Store. And of course I, you know, have to go in when
was,
you see
was it orange?
Well, I actually bought this shirt there. I did support them cause I did a couple videos there and I was like, well, I'm not going to just, you know, keep, bombarding you and not buy anything. But, this Trump Store, kind of a quirky place. The first time I went in, I was just kind of checking it out because it's kind of bizarre, you know, that you, have a store dedicated to who is right now the former president, might be the president, might be not. And I even asked the guy, what's going to happen here if, he doesn't get elected? Like, is your store going to change the name or what,
Dollar General,
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, something. Yeah, exactly. He gave me a good answer, but anyways, I went in there a second time because again, I happened to be in another town nearby filming a different video. And I was like, you know what? This place is only 20 minutes. I want to go back. Cause the first time I went there, I got a lot of, interesting commentary from the guy. And he was telling me that all walks of life go into this store. You know, he's basically saying a lot of people that, obviously like Trump come here and buy stuff. And then I get, a lot of liberals that come here and they kind of hate the store and you can hear them making comments when they're in here, but people just want to come check it out or whatever, all kinds, And I happened to be in there for a while. And then this black woman and her friend walked in and they're selling these cards in the store that say white privilege on the card. They have two of them. They have one that says race card. They look like credit cards. And there's one that's a white privilege card. They both have like numbers on them for the card number. This is like 1865 or whatever. And so she was looking at them and I already had the video rolling. So I was just like, what do you think of that card? And when I asked the question, you pretty much could have heard like a pin drop in the store. I was kind of surprised by that, actually, because all of a sudden everyone was looking at us having this conversation. And I'm thinking, you guys are kind of hypocrites a little bit because you actually are like almost I don't even know how to explain it. Like the people that were in the store that technically like are supporting the message, right, or like too afraid to ask that question. To just a normal person, it's still there's tension there, even though you're like literally in the store selling race cards.
Yeah, they're just trying to earn their 9-to-5 paycheck.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. But yeah, the guy's been nice enough to let me film that. The guy Robert that manages it. But yeah, I asked her the question. She gave me some very articulate answers. Basically, said that she thought the white privilege is not a thing, essentially, and that's it's kind of overplayed or whatever. And I asked her, are you pro Trump? And I literally told her, I'm like, hey, I'm not offended by your answer. I don't think the guy, in the store necessarily knows my personal political views about that. But and she kind of said that basically she felt like she got coerced into believing the sound bites that CNN and MSNBC were playing back in 2016, and eventually she looked it up for herself and realized that it was all a lie, and she basically just said that this country is not as hateful as the media makes it out to be. You know,
right. And I think that's good. And that's why I really like what you're doing, because you're getting, you know, we can't go off of what CNN tells us or Fox tells us.
Well, you know what the weird thing about that is, that video, you know, did go viral for me in long format and in short format. I think it got like 13,000 something views on it. And I had all these comments, which now I've just stopped reading the comments. But I got all these comments that were like basically saying that I made the whole thing up or I staged it. I'm like, you really think I have time to do that as a song?
Well, I mean, channel, you know? The thing is, people won't go have that conversation on their own. So they, when they see you have that conversation, they don't believe it, because they won't have that conversation. They're too awkward in that situation. They just, you know, they pick up their phone and they look down and they walk away. You know, why not talk to people on the street like you do?
Let's
find out what's really going on.
Yeah, I was in really disbelief by that. And there was people too that like thought, I don't know. There was someone even said that I like cornered her in the store. They're like, of course she would answer the question how you want her to. Like I have an agenda there, and then saying like, oh, see all the Confederate flags behind her? She's scared. And I'm like, I literally, like, before the video rolled, I was literally asked her on video, are you cool with being on video and answering some questions? Yeah, go ahead. I mean, you can't make it up, but people really make it up in their mind. They think that everything. They think everything's slanted no matter what. I think that actually just shows that there is just a huge divide in the country, because now I just see it firsthand on my YouTube page of all these people thinking that I'm making up the video or something, you know?
No, I know you're not. And I think it's a confirmation bias kind of thing where people get in their own little echo chamber. And so anything that breaks that norm, they're going to do mental gymnastics to make it fit their perspective. And you're going to get trolls out there to do that. And then you're going to get people, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, so that's the confirmation bias portion. Yeah, he made this stuff up. And it's kind of like the Obama phone lady. And who had the Obama phone lady on? Was that Alex Jones or
somebody? I don't know if I know about that.
Oh, it was the lady that's like, I got my Obama phone. And then later she's like not so much of an Obama supporter. You know, well, the phone was, here's your big brother. You know, for free. But sure. Anyway, let's go on to where people can find you. Let's see. We got, so this, I want to get this out of the way first. So this is your Rumble, but you got two Rumbles. So let's make sure we got the right one.
Yes.
Surge the Purge. You got two, because I know setting up Rumble is kind of goofy. I want to make sure we get you enough followers. You have 8 right now on this one. We need to get you more so you can live stream if you want. But you got this one that, was this the accident one? Or?
Yes, the blue one is, I actually didn't even know what it was until you pointed it out to me. So don't follow that one if you think it's me, because it is not. Or it might be, and I just don't know what I'm doing. But the the one that I would like for everyone to follow is the one with my face with the purple backdrop. That is me. That is my channel. I need to get a little bit more frequent with the uploads here and just do it when I'm, you know, uploading YouTube videos. Because right now it's been like YouTube's first, then Rumble comes second in terms of the upload cycle. But I am still consistent on here. So, and I plan on doing live streaming here and everything.
So I will make sure that this Rumble link on the Knights of the Storm website goes to that one and not the other one. I'm not sure which one. Let's find out. Which one does it go to? It goes to the wrong one. So I will fix that, brother. I changed it because I thought you changed it.
No worries. And I was going to mention too about that that documentary, the Fourth Reich WEF one. If you choose to share the documentary, please share it on Rumble, as I plan on taking down the one off my YouTube page at some point, because it's kind of throttling my channel a little bit, to be honest. So I'd like to, but I obviously still want to have it up, but it's just going to be on Rumble. So that way my channel doesn't get banned, because I'd like to have some longevity. Yeah.
It will. Well, it'll either get banned or, like you said, throttled, shadow banned, whatever. So you're trying, and that's why you have you do have two YouTubes here. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. Why the two YouTubes? Explain.
This one is going to be kind of more of the one, you know, more edgy content for the Purge. I also want to have like other people's stuff featured eventually on there. Because I have the website too, where I want to get some other journalists to write for it as well. But yeah, I mean, the second channel is more of the podcast stuff, and then my narration documentaries, which just they take me longer to make, basically. But if you want to know more of my opinion on the videos that I make, then that is where you would go, is to my second channel that has 8 subscribers at the moment, unlike my main channel.
There we go. I just subscribed. There you go. You got 9.
I haven't put enough videos on there yet to build it up yet. But see, I have the documentary there too. But I might just take it off YouTube completely and just keep it on Rumble at some point. That way, I can just have the
YouTube. I would say keep it on YouTube as long as you can, because we were Knights of the Storm was actually getting a pretty good following on YouTube.
Was
and
it?
It was actually bringing people over to the Rumble as well and to the Twitter. But then they nixed us. Because we basically read some Pfizer documents that we weren't supposed to know about.
I don't know. I've had a couple of people tell me like, hey, you might just want to put that on Rumble, because I did, even like within the first week that I put it out, I think they subtracted like 30 views off of the video.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's just like yeah, they subtract the views. Yeah, so I don't know.
I've literally watched where it says there's like, you know, 30 people watching, and then I go to the views while 30 people are watching, it says there's like 3 views. They do that.
Yeah. So that is what is like actual shadow banning, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, people, it's depressing. Suppressing. To push you down the list, because the more views you get, it's just like a Google search, right? You Google search somebody, the more hits it gets, the more it's going to be up on the list as far as results. You know, if you haven't paid for the ad space, you know, you get the first 3 or 4 ads that people pay for it, but then it's on merit. Well, they'll push that merit down. So they'll suppress your views on purpose to put you down the list. So that's just how they do it.
Yeah. We'll see how long I leave it up there. I think once I hit like 1,000 subs, because then I can monetize the channel, I might just leave it on Rumble and let it be monetized there. You know how it goes.
Yeah, you got to try to get something for your effort. And then you got this. This is your website.
That's my website. So if you scroll down, I just have. Yeah, like there's that. That's the Rumble link. Actually, if you literally click on the icon, it'll just take you right to it. And then this will take you right to my YouTube channel. So I kind of have them separated there. And then I have articles as well on the tab above there.
Where are we at? Yeah. Articles. There we go.
Yeah, there you go. So I have articles. So this one is Real Secrets of the Illuminati. Yeah, if you click read more. Then it shows you like the whole thing. It's kind of a long read though, but yeah, if you have the time and you want to know, a lot of time was put into this. At some point,
I have not read this. I have not. I'm gonna have to read this. This will be interesting.
Well, thank you.
Long of a read, man. Come on.
It's long enough, right? Yeah. Well, I don't, it might be like 10. Yes. I don't know, but whatever.
The TikTok crowd, I guess that's kind of
right.
Long.
Yeah. Yeah. The younger audience has a hard time these days. At some point I plan on making a video documentary to go along with that. That's kind of what I try to do, but I'd like to get other writers, you know, on the site eventually. And then I do have some merch coming out soon, but just figuring out the distributor aspect of that is, kind of in the works at the moment. So if anyone knows distributing, there you go. That's the first design.
I love it.
I actually would like to lower the price on that. Like I said, it's just about getting the right distributor, because I don't have one yet. It's kind of in the works, but that's what
if you gave it away for free, it would kind of negate the message, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd like to sell it maybe for like 25 if possible. I might have to sell them for 30. It just depends on, you know, my cost going into it basically. But obviously I understand why I don't want to upset people by being like, how could you sell a t-shirt for $30? And it's like, well, if I'm paying close to 20, you know, for the shirt, I have to get the cost down. But yeah. There you have it.
And
you know.
And quantity that is a big thing too, you know.
Yeah. So, but I appreciate you showing those links.
Yeah. Well, I guess the last question I have, and we're already kind of, we're already over our hour, but anyway, we'll keep going for a couple more minutes. What's in the future? Like, what do you plan on doing? How do you plan on expanding?
Yes. So I in the future, I mean, I plan on, taking this effort across all of America, doing the citizen journalism type of content. It's just about, you know, getting the budget to do that. And hopefully the more videos I can, you know, kind of something I was talking about, you know, before we started it, which I think no one really wants to have to say this, but it just is a thing, right? Like, in order to make quality content, in order to make quality research, you know, you do have to, you know, monetize yourself essentially. So, at some, you know, point when I'm able to, kind of bring that in more is when I'll be going on the road, doing more like road trip kind of stuff around the country, setting that up, and making it happen. And then on the back end, of course, I always want to funnel people into the more esoteric, you know, stuff like the Illuminati thing, like people, you know, watching my video about LA are probably not the first thing on their radar.
Yeah.
So it's somewhat separate, somewhat together, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's a good strategy. I mean, the LA thing you did kind of hit home to me because I live there and it's way, way different. What I saw from your video is way different. And of course, this is what, 20, almost 30 years ago. I lived there. Much, much different place. And it kind of puts into perspective what's happening. Like I said, a slow boiling frog. That's what America is. And they're destroying certain cities. Very, you know, left-leaning cities are being destroyed. And then those people flee and go to other cities. And then they just breed. It's like a freaking disease, man. It just keeps spreading. And yeah. I don't know what we do about it. I really don't, you know.
It is a political, a lot of ways it's a political and spiritual fight. People,
there you go. Spiritual. Yep.
Yeah. You know, people that are Marxists live in these kinds of places and they ruin them somewhat purposefully and sometimes through ignorance, probably both. And then you get people that are still left that just, they can't see that these people are actual Marxists. They just think that doesn't exist in America because they live in America. And then they go to like another state, you know, like Arizona. And then they don't realize that what they actually think is pretty far left. And then they'll vote for that. And then the problem is the people that they vote for, where they think they're being a moderate, those people that they put in office actually are Marxists. So then they actually do those things that they thought was moderate, you know, and then just, you know, compile your state down the drain, essentially.
Yeah. Well, you know, I hope to see it reset. Like as people move out of California, you know, to use that as an example, you know, the people who made it like kind of crappy and the people who live there, I'm not blaming them. You know, if you're homeless or you live there and you're having a hard time, you just kind of like grew up in it and you think that's the normal. That is not the normal across the US. It's not. Hopefully as those people that made it the normal in California leave because they flee their, you know, their own product, and they bring it somewhere else. Hopefully California comes back up because California has something that a lot of places don't have. They have import, you know, for the ports and stuff like that. They have beautiful beaches. I mean, it's a beautiful state. You know, they have skiing. They have the high deserts with the dune buggies. They have all kinds of cool stuff going on in California. I just see it come back. Once the bad people that caused the problem leave, hopefully it regenerates itself. That's what I hope to see.
Yeah, one thing I do want to just say real quick is you know, coming at, because like kind of what I was just saying too with the people, they moved to another state. A lot of these people really don't realize their ideologies are very far left. And what doesn't work, in my personal opinion, is basically shoving your thoughts down their throat in anger. never, it doesn't work, you know. As much as I've been provoked to that anger myself personally, it only hardens everyone's heart on both sides. So part of the reason I do what I do, and obviously, you know, frankly, some of my videos just show my bias, especially the gun stuff. I like guns. What can I say?
I'm going to get you on for a gun episode, man, because I'm a pro gun guy. You know that.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, like some of my stuff just, you know, it is what it is. But a lot of stuff, the goal, the message, I guess I should say, is to try to be fair to everybody on camera and let them speak. That's all it is. Here's the thing. You don't need to argue with someone to let them essentially meme themselves or make themselves a caricature. They will do it to themselves. All you have to do is ask them a question. And if they give you a ridiculous answer, it is what it is. You don't have to do anything. So I think if you can be calm, just to everyone watching this, if you're a human being that just talks to people, rather you could, I think planting seeds, you know, from a biblical standpoint, carrying yourself that way, planting seeds with people and just letting people speak and having enough discipline to let everyone speak as you also speak yourself is how you actually make change. Because I guess the reason I can do this on YouTube that I'm discovering, and maybe I'm wrong. Hopefully I don't get banned like tomorrow and I just jinx the whole thing. Right. But the reason I feel like I can do what I'm doing right now on YouTube as a platform specifically is because I try to go into it without sharing my political beliefs, if that makes sense.
A lot of your videos are just you walking around asking people their thoughts from the local community. And I think that's great. I mean, I could obviously tell what your thoughts are as a broadcaster or whatever, but you don't push that. And that was always my issue. I'm going to get on a rant here, but I used to be a Tucker Carlson fan. And I'm not so much anymore. I'm still kind of figuring out what he's doing. But one thing I did not like about Tucker is he would have these ultra liberals on to interview them and he would cut them off. He wouldn't let them speak. And I'm like, would you shut up and let them speak? Because they'll destroy their argument if you just let them speak. Let people speak and, you know, the truth will come out. Instead of trying to steer a narrative, you know?
Yeah. And that's the problem is, and I understand why everyone is emotionally heightened on both sides. I mean, the media does it to people and even right-leaning people, it's done to them as well. Anyone that views this podcast isn't in this category more than likely, but there's more of that rah-rah mentality that is no better, frankly, than the far left that, you know, just want to assault you for, whatever your belief is, essentially. So there has to be discipline. It doesn't even come, you don't even have to change your beliefs. If you can just discipline yourself to have a conversation, regardless of how you internally feel about it, I think is how you, you know, promote change even on a small level, even if it's just with your friends or your family or something, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I was to talk to an ultra left-leaning person, I would say to myself, these people don't even realize they're crazy. But if I put myself in their shoes, they're saying to themselves, this guy doesn't even realize he's racist or, you know, check the
right,
box,
yeah,
or whatever. So, you know, you got to understand it. Just an honest conversation and just saying, hey, what do you think about this? Let them talk and then let it be that.
And you can't let these people attack your character. I think that's the other aspect of it is when people lose, they start attacking you personally. And I have interviews on the channel with far left people. I mean, they don't even have to say they're far left for you to tell, right? Like I had those hippies in the video who don't want to be called hippies, who also say they hate capitalism, yet they bought this land, live off the land, and still are using electricity, right? So it's like kind of hip. I didn't even say any of that in the video, but you know, everyone else said it for me in the comments. It's like, hey, these guys are all hypocrites, you know? But they didn't know what I thought about them when I was out there in their property. And I try to be respectful too, because it is their property. I'm not going to go to someone else's home and, verbally get in a banter with them. It's dangerous for one, but also it's disrespectful. But at the same time, I think you just have to take the high road, you know, with this kind of stuff with everybody, you know. Yeah. let people speak. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with honest conversation, open and honest. But I guess we'll wrap it up, man. Is there any final thoughts you got?
Thank you for having me on again. And, you know, I know we're talking about something in the works, and hopefully we can make it happen.
Oh, definitely. So, well, I guess I'll close this out then. Well, that does it for tonight. Remember to hold your ground, watch the enemy, improve the foxhole, and always look out for one another. Until next time.
You've been watching The Foxhole with Jason Barker.